Welcome everyone to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric here on YouTube Live, Twitch TV, and on my personal account on Facebook Live. We're still not good to go, but we will get there. Tonight is a special episode. It is our first episode of the final four of AFI's top movies of all time. We counted down the top eight, and tonight, Eric and I are going to determine a winner. That's right. There will be a winner, and this category will be done and dusted, and we will declare a winner this evening. We did a poll earlier on the Jarrett Goes to the Movies fan page and on our own Facebook page to kind of get some early votes. But as you're watching this, anybody who joins the live stream, feel free to chime in if you like one of the movies. What Eric and I are going to do, it's pretty simple. We're going to just go through the remaining four films, and I'm going to bring them up right now. This is where we are at, and this is where we got to from when we started this a few weeks ago. We're down to just four films to determine who is the greatest film of all time. And these are the four. Schindler's List came in as the eight-seed upset over Citizen Kane. Singing in the Rain, who we determined was better than Raging Bull last week. The Godfather, who trounced Lawrence of Arabia, and Casablanca, who narrowly beat Gone with the Wind. So by the end of this evening, we will determine what the best film is, and we'll be very satisfied in doing so. Now, the whole thing about the show is really that it's a debate. It's an open debate. I had, when I posted up today that we were doing these final four, I had people who were unfamiliar with the podcast that were going, well, wait, where's this movie? Where's that movie? So I was like, well, we've already gotten to these four, and it's debatable whether you think these are the greatest of all time, right? This is the top eight according to AFI, and we're just whittling down a winner. And with me is Eric. Welcome this evening. He's doing a mime impersonation. He's doing a mime impersonation right now. He's got to switch his mic settings. Just switch to your regular mic. Here we go again. Every week, folks. So it wouldn't be Box Office Battles if Eric's mic did not work. He's going to jump out and jump back in. Once he does, we are going to discuss the top four of our final four and determine a winner. I also want to point out tonight at the end, when we've declared a winner, we are going to do a sneak peek of the next category that we got coming up. I'm really excited about this. It is going to be sports comedies, but not just any sports comedies, just more of the adult variety, more of the kind of the ones for the grown-ups there, not in your Sandlot, even though that's a great film. So we're going to discuss the top eight sports comedies. What we're going to do is count down all eight films that are going to be in that battle, and then next week we are going to have our very first battle in that category, and you will love the films that have been chosen. I think it's going to be a something to be really excited about. So as soon as we get Eric back in, we're going to discuss the final film, the final four films, and the first two being Schindler's List and Singing in the Rain. Now, last week, we overwhelmingly loved Singing in the Rain. It went up against Raging Bull, and it was kind of a divisive film for us. We both like Raging Bull. It wasn't anything that we had against it. Let's see if he's back in.
Oh, for the love of Christ.
It's becoming, I think you're doing it on purpose. I think it's a bit.
It would be a lot funnier to me if it were a bit. This happened on Zoom call. I thought yesterday, I'm going to really impress these people that I work with and not show up to this call with me sitting in a tank top on my couch, you know? And like, so I came in here and I set all the stuff up, and I should have fucking known. Hello, everybody. Hello, the thousands listening live and the millions listening on your favorite podcast provider. Yes. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Eric. What is your beverage of choice this evening?
It's always coffee, decaf coffee. This is community coffee out of Louisiana, my go-to. I have been trying this 8 o'clock coffee. I mean, I'm not like some sort of coffee snob, but right. Because this is stuff that I believe is generally available at most of your finer retailers like Walmart, or CVS,
right?
Wherever you buy coffee, you could probably find these. But I find these two, Community Coffee and 8 o'clock Coffee, to be pretty great. But I can't have the caffeine this late at night, Greg, or else you know how it goes. You never get to sleep. You, on the other hand, are having bourbon. You'll sleep just fine.
I should. I did not get a lot of sleep last night. The wife and I went to see Lindsey Stirling at our local venue here, and it was a fabulous show, but it was went until almost 11, and then I didn't get to sleep after we got home and everything until nearly midnight, and then my wife had to get up at the butt crack of dawn to catch a flight because she's visiting my son in North Dakota. So she left this morning. I had to take her to the airport, and so I am running on about 5 hours sleep, so I figured to get up for the show rather than sit here and look sluggish.
Yeah. Start drinking.
Woodford Reserve. It is what it is. I got to get up early in the morning and go to work.
So you have a son that lives in North Dakota.
He does now. He just moved there. Yes. He's in the Air Force.
Okay.
He joined the Air Force like his dear old dad was in for 22 years. So he's been in, good Lord, been in a while now. I'm thinking going on 7. If he's in the chat, he's supposed to be checking in tonight. He could tell me. Just to be sure. But so he's been in quite a while. He's a tech sergeant. He is an aerial gunner on the Huey helicopters and systems operator. So very proud of him. And just moved to Minot. So the wife is out there visiting. So we're really excited.
Well,
chance to.
Cheers to the troops. All the troops. Both sides.
Okay. That way you just cover all bases and you don't offend anybody.
I don't feel like I have to like really figure out geopolitical issues that are probably more complex. And if they could be solved easily, some fucking moron like me wouldn't be the one that had, the idea. Hey, have you guys ever thought about just, go ahead and fucking and getting it over with already or whatever it is? I mean, that would be a good idea.
I don't think try it first.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's it. Maybe it's sexual tension. I'm not going to go too much.
I don't want to see Biden and Putin going at it. They can do that off camera. I don't think that's something the world needs to see.
What about Kamala
and Putin? No,
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, there's a category for that. If you go to Pornhub, you'll probably find something like that.
It was who's Nayland Palin. The big famous one there for a while.
The lookalike. Oh, we got Cripplius in the chat calling us the new Siskel and Ebert, which is very kind.
I didn't watch that show, but I have read, there's a book that compiled a bunch of Roger Ebert's better film critiques.
Okay.
Because, they're both newspaper writers. They just did the show. What was he, Chicago Sun or something like Chicago Sun Times?
Yeah.
And the guy is a Pulitzer Prize winning film critic. And I mean, his way with words, I was a journalism major. Mm-hmm. I was sports editor for my school paper and I was a journalism major in college. His way with words is just so far beyond the way he can eviscerate a movie that he thinks is bad, the way he can glorify a movie that he thinks was really good. It's just amazing. If you've listening and you've not, if you only know Siskel and Ebert from their TV show, I strongly recommend reading some of, think of a movie you like and type into Bing your browser of search engine of choice, Alta Vista or Lycos, whatever. The name of the movie and Ebert's review of it. I guess it has to be of a certain age.
Can't be anything new. Don't look for Ebert's review on Alien Romulus. You're not going to find it.
Been awfully quiet lately.
They have the website that they still use, that they use his name. And you can go to RogerEbert.com and they have other people reviewing him. But I've noticed that they just kind of keep using his name to kind of put out there because apparently those reviewers aren't good on their own. Yeah, no, I used to watch him, the sneak previews or at the movies when it was on when I was growing up. I was just a huge movie nerd, so I did enjoy it. But as I got older, I realized they didn't like the same movies I liked. I mean, that the everyman kind of, they did, they liked their more dramas, the more Oscar-winning type inspired films. And then they would eviscerate some some bad films, that's for sure.
They only liked Citizen Kane, so, you know.
This is the voice I would choose to use when I'm being Greg as a film student and is,
you know.
You're talking about me. I don't talk.
Yeah, well, in your film classes in grad school, when you were getting your doctorate in cinematographic studies. Cinematographic.
Actually, I went to film school, but it was through Arizona State University online to get my master's, and used my good old GI Bill to pay for it. And the whole class was really about everything: cinematography, script writing, and they brought over the 2 years I had to write my own screenplay,
which is a piece on behalf of myself and the rest of the listeners, at least the ones here in America. Right. You're welcome. For the opportunity for you to go.
Hey, I served my country, damn it. I deserved that GI Bill.
My dad went to college on the GI Bills, just like went to 1 year of college. It did not go well. Mm. So he enlisted at a time when Vietnam was still going on.
Ooh.
They asked if he wanted to go to OCS. And he said, well, I thought about it for a half a minute. And then remembered where they were sending officers at the time. And so he declined that, and he was a secretary in Kaiserslautern, Germany.
Oh, I know where K-Town is. Yeah, I've been there.
For 3 years, and then came back, finished college, did much better after developing some discipline in the Army, or maybe just realizing that that's not what he wanted to do for a long time. And so... then that was it. Worked for Texas Instruments the rest of his life, and here I am today, bragging about it.
Yeah. I mean, if he'd have joined the Air Force, he probably would have stayed in. That's just saying. It's the best of all the branches.
You know, there were a time when I wasn't, you'll find this very difficult to believe, but in my very early 20s, let's just say I maybe didn't have my shit quite together, but like real bad. Not just like this guy doesn't know anything, but like every decision I made was the wrong one somehow. You'd think you'd stumble over yourself and like fall into a correct decision, and I just couldn't.
Right.
And I definitely thought about joining the military, and I asked my dad, and he said, you should just go to the Air Force. It's like, you'll just, you know, he's like, I think it would be the best option for just about anybody.
It's so. Military light. If you like a good light beverage, the Air Force is military light. I mean, we had to go through basic, but and we have our own types of training, but the Army and the other branches, they treat their people like dog shit, just because from experience. I have family that's been in all the branches, so I just know this from personal experience in my own. I was always treated well comparatively, and then loved my time in the Air Force. But speaking of Vietnam, just during my time in the Air Force, I had got to meet Adrian Cronauer of Good Morning Vietnam fame.
Oh,
a connection to the movies there. And that was like a really, really cool moment in my time in the Air Force, was being able to meet the dude that did that.
Add it to the list of war movies like Platoon and Good Morning Vietnam and There's Apocalypse Now. And
I have my own personal favorites: Full Metal Jacket, Hamburger.
Okay. Hill. Yeah. Okay. Well, then add that
to a category. There's an idea. Yeah. There's a category there.
The Battle for
films or just war films, you know?
Yeah, the Iwo Jima one, that wasn't there one? John Wayne and...
Sands at Iwo Jima was John Wayne, and then you have Letters from Iwo Jima, which was Clint Eastwood directed that, and then Flags of Our Fathers, which was about the race. Yeah, there's a lot out there. So,
all right, well, I'm excited to get to the bottom of this. Yes. I mean, listen, I was here for all of the previous episodes, as were you.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And I get the sense that I know how this all ends up. Now, I'll tell you in an hour and a half whether I was right or whether I was wrong. But I got a feeling
the way it might go. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll just have to see. You know, the first two, because we've got, like I said, we've got the two final four matchups to decide. To get there. And the first one we're going to discuss, and we're basically the way I look at it. So we've got Schindler's List versus Singin' in the Rain. We'll discuss that one first. And we'll kind of just make a case for each We don't really need to rehash the movies again. We did it. If you didn't hear that, you can go back to those episodes. And then we'll discuss the merits of Godfather versus Casablanca. And then we'll decide who our final two are going to be. So when we get into Schindler's List, you know, we covered that. That was one of the first ones we covered. In fact, that was the very first one we covered. It went up against Citizen Kane. I think we both, you know, respect the film quite a bit. The performances are amazing. The way they film it in black and white adds a special type of effect to it. We all know that Spielberg, you know, his capability as a genius director, and this is, you know, no different than anything else that he produced. We know the stories behind it. But when we go up and we look at Schindler's List, is it the greatest movie of all time?
Yeah. So when we matched it up against Citizen Kane, my argument at the time, and I would stand by it, was that it hit me in a way that Citizen Kane just didn't. Now, I don't think that that necessarily makes it a better movie than Citizen Kane. But what I do know, and what I think a lot of the audience voted on that one and Schindler's List one, is that it's a poignant, hit you like a ton of bricks, as this subject matter ought to. And so it had, I think it just had a built-in advantage. I think that that movie just started, I think that it started out just a little ahead, out of the blocks for me, because of the subject matter, because it was heavy, you know. And I think maybe in that instance, Citizen Kane just didn't catch up. But that, I mean, you know, that's what we, that's, I think you and I both agreed that that the, it was like having a ton of bricks dropped on you.
Yeah. It's a gut-wrenching film, and that's kind of why I voted for Citizen Kane. Is not that I dislike the film. I'm a military buff, you know, basically being in, but also because I'm old and I think it's the law that you have to be into military history. Are you okay? You're not going to die on me, are you? You're not going to choke on some Pop Rocks and make internet history. All right, he's good. Eric is just, he's caught on a bone in his coffee there.
Oh my God. I just got it down the wrong pipe. think but I'm used to it by now.
Start reliving your college years. But like I was saying with the military history thing, very big into it. Love movies about World War II, not because I'm a war fanatic. I just like the history of it and learning about, you know, what came before. Yeah. And of course, there's so much on World War II and the Holocaust. And when I watch it, I do get the retro aspect of it. And the story of the Holocaust is extremely gut-wrenching. And I give Spielberg credit. He makes this so uncomfortable to watch that it is emotionally, unless you're not sympathetic to the plight of the people, otherwise
are you going to counterpoint us here, Greg, or
you might look at it differently if you're not on that side. But even if you're just a human being, you can relate to what those people encountered during World War II. So in that aspect, it does everything it set out to do, and I think everything that Spielberg set out to do.
And this is the only one of the matchups that I did not take the tack of which of these would I rather watch again. Because if I'm being honest, I would rather not watch either one of them again. You know,
you wouldn't watch Singing in the Rain again?
No. I meant Schindler's List from
the first
Citizen Kane.
Right.
So I had to, I think for the other three matchups, that is kind of the viewpoint from which I was able to make a selection. This one was not that. I think I could safely live the rest of my life. But like you said, it's uncomfortable. I have a hard time watching documentaries about World War II. You know, we'll have the Pacific Theater, and we'll have the European Theater, and we'll have the Battle of the Atlantic. And then I know that as these documentaries progress, that as we get towards the end of the war and we start to find out all of the things that were going on, I have to skip those episodes where they talk about troops rolling up to Auschwitz or you know, any of the others. It's gut-wrenching, like you said, and I have a really tough time with it. I probably have a tougher time now, as a lot of people, I think, experience once you have kids and you think about, we see this in the film, you know, children snatched away from their mother's arms. And so that it really, you know, if it didn't bother me before, it certainly bothers me now. And so, yeah, but we chose it. Me and the audience, not you, Greg. You can't take any credit for this. We chose it because I think it just, it does something to your soul and your heart and to your emotions that Citizen Kane, although a brilliantly crafted movie, just didn't do. It just couldn't. It just wouldn't be able to do that. The subject matter isn't similar enough to stir that up in a person, I don't think. And that's the only reason I think Schindler's List in that specific matchup became right. Our winner.
And I can acknowledge that, no problem. I like Citizen Kane for a lot of different reasons, but we're not here to rehash that. It's really, does Schindler's List, you know, belong where it is? We said when we started doing this that this is AFI's top eight as it is currently right now. They change all the time. And so these things move up and down. And I think the significance of Schindler's List right now is that humanistic story, because like one of the things I enjoy as a history buff or World War II buff is reading those human stories. And you read a lot when you read history, you get more of that in depth than you do from a lot of the war movies. Like take Hacksaw Ridge, for example, excellent film. But if you read the book, there's so much more story to tell and in a more gripping way. What I will give Schindler's List credit is it comes as close to being as real and as a genuine, a historic film as any that I've ever seen compared to like a novelization of one. So I there's a lot to really like about Schindler's List, despite the fact that it is a hard watch, but it is a therapeutic watch. Once you get to the end and you see what this man did and the good that came out of it, had we not had that ending where they put the rocks on his grave, I don't think that, you know, that would have the same resonation if they had all been slaughtered in the last camp. It would have been very disheartening. Thank God that that's not how the story turned out.
I think I would have chosen Citizen Kane if that were the way Schindler's List ended. Have you ever seen show up on your social feeds? It'll be this 60s or 70s, maybe early 80s television program, and there's this man sitting in the audience, and they talk about that this man saved a bunch of Jewish orphans or something, some such. And never really made a big deal about it. And they got all of these, everyone sitting around him is an adult who was saved by this guy during World War II. And then, I don't know exactly how they set it up, but they would be like, you know, would you stand up if so-and-so saved your life, and all, you know, one by one, and all of a sudden the entire audience is standing and he's still sitting there. And of course he's crying. Of course, every time it shows up on my feed, I start crying. So those true stories of humanity against the odds, against, I guess it's easy to take a stand when there's no real consequences involved. Right. And it's much more difficult to do that when the consequence is certain death for you and probably your whole family.
Yeah.
So Schindler's List, it's gritty and it's real and it hits you like a ton of bricks, but it's a story of courage. It's a story of one man doing the impossible, the unthinkable. And like you said, the payoff for that is hours of feeling like you're being kicked in the nuts, but at the end, like you said, a really poignant. And you know, I kind of had a problem with that shift from film to kind of present day, and these are the real people, and it broke the, I don't know, broke the fourth wall a little too much for me.
I see what you're saying. It could have been something they did, you know, like they do that during the credits where they'll show like the real photographs. It could have been done during the credits and had that whole thing play out, but that is what it is. The individual you're talking about, I know what you're talking about. There's a great movie, again, check it out, write it down, The Railway Children. And it's the children that were evacuated from the war-torn areas and sent to England to escape being able to be in Germany during when everything broke out, the Jewish children. So yeah, great film. They also did the same thing with Oskar Schindler later in life, where he got to meet a lot of the people that he saved. So not discounting any of that, as a film, it is an outstanding film. And I think it you know, I have no problem with it being in the top eight. So now we've got the decision to talk about the other film in the final four that it's going up against. And we covered this last podcast, was Singing in the Rain. Yeah. And you really couldn't be as far as the emotions you go through in watching a film, you can't be more polar opposites. I mean, we thought Raging Bull was polar opposite to Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
This is even further when you've got the Holocaust, tons of death, really likable characters that get killed. And then you just have people try la 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 la.
Yeah, I mean, when it was just statutory rape and, you know, some mild domestic violence, you know, then moving.
Speaking of Raging Bull, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of Raging Bull, and then moving into the Holocaust, obviously a bigger deal. We both liked Singing in the Rain for a lot of the same reasons that I liked Schindler's List, and that how it made you feel. Now, those were two very different feelings of how I was made to feel. And those matchups were very similar, because the only feeling I had watching Raging Bull was like, when is this guy gonna get his comeuppance? You know, and it only Father Time gives his comeuppance to Jake LaMotta, it seems. Yeah. You know, he just kind of, over the course of many years, kind of loses everything he had and ends up a caricature of himself. So we liked the feelings. And I said in that show, if you haven't listened, within 5 minutes of turning it on, I was just sitting there with this big goofy grin on my face, like, this is so great.
Yeah.
It's funny. The jokes hold up. There's physical comedy, there's wit, there's song and dance. It's one of the great leading men, I think, in that one. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we did agree on that one, if I remember correctly.
For sure, without a doubt. I'll say this about Singing in the Rain. You know, Schindler's List will impact me in an emotional way, as far as like making you think about how cruel human beings can be. Singing in the Rain affected me from a very young age in a positive way, where I was not a big fan of regular musicals. We talked about this, like Oklahoma. So mm-hmm. I don't mind them. But then I saw Gene Kelly, and it changed the way I looked at it. And then then I started watching all of his films, and they're very similar in theme, where it is an everyman, whether he's a sailor, whether he's this everyday guy, whether he's an actor, and he's just trying to do the best that he can. And he sings in American in Paris, brilliant film. And so when I discovered these, it really put a positive impact on my life. And it's one of those things, like, there's a few things in this world that when I'm at my lowest point that I can put on and it will change my mood completely. And Singing in the Rain, or any Gene Kelly film, is that way. So it affects me in a different way emotionally. It like you talked about, within 5 minutes, you knew you were going to like the film. You knew. And anybody who's never seen it, go watch it. I mean, tomorrow, make your plans this weekend to get it on streaming or whatever. You can find it. It's very easy. It's 70 years old, for crying out loud. You won't regret it. It is going to make you happy. And it'll make you remember when things were, you know, a little bit more simpler. Yeah, we can talk about, you know, the 50s and the problems they had, but as far as the filmmaking goes, it was
yeah
it was very simple time. Now, we're not going to talk about Shirley Temple being made to work, you know, 13 hours a day until her feet bled, and poor Debbie Reynolds, you know, having blisters from trying to dance. But the film itself is a time capsule of that era and the grandiose of MGM musicals. It is truly brilliant. And I do believe it is one of the best films ever made. Without it.
Yeah, luckily we're not here to critique how the movies got made or the time period in which they were made, which saves us from admittedly some difficult conversations, right?
Exactly.
But that's such a neat thing for you that it has that kind of effect, like you were talking about, when I'm not feeling my best and I can put a movie like this on. And that's just so neat. It's a great feeling to have that emotional safety net, you know, or just security blanket, right? But just reading this, Singing in the Rain also tells how hard it was for movies to become sound. Yeah, well, and it's
a great history lesson.
And you described it perfectly. First, you described it to me as we went off the air for one of the previous shows, I knew that I was going to be watching this, and you said it's like this meta within a meta movie, you know, one of the first to do it that way, if not the first. And I mean, I'm certain that there have been movies made about making movies, but it really rolled in, like you said, kind of all of the tongue in cheek, the plot device being going from the silent movies to the talkies, and using that as the main kind of plot point, as we, you know, that all of the characters have to react to, you know, this new paradigm or reality that they face, and how they each do that. And it was great. I mean, we chose it from Raging Bull for a reason. And yeah, I mean, I just talked about it for 5 minutes with my dad. And that night that you and I were talking about it, here's my dad texting me because he's watching it. Right. So you must not be the only person who hears that and goes, oh man, I got to watch that again. Like, it's been too long. I'm sure that's what my dad did. It was just sitting there by himself. He lives alone up in Oklahoma, dog and his chickens and his cat, and I'm sure he was just sitting there, and at the end of the day went, I'm gonna watch Singing in the Rain. And I know why he chose that, because we talked about it, and because he knew, because he had seen it before, it was gonna make him feel fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So, and that's how it would make me feel. I could watch it again this week. I mean, I just watched it a couple of weeks ago. I could easily watch that thing again. Maybe of all of these movies, and I'm not saying that out of all eight of these that it's the best movie,
right?
But if I probably had to choose one of these eight to watch again, I'd probably watch Singing in the Rain again. It's good enough to be enjoyable again. It's light enough to not feel like it takes a bunch of physical dedication of time or mental dedication of I'm really need to be prepared to be challenged here. But it's not fluff either. Nope. You know, it is the perfect balance of everything that's right about, like you said, those MGM musicals. And I'm kind of taking your word for that, because I don't have a lot of experience with them, but it is just so well made.
And I have no problem with, like, My Fair Lady. Me and my wife just watched that. I got it for her on 4K. That's one of her favorites. And I really enjoy it. I think it's a fabulous film. But for me, like, and to me, My Fair Lady is really good for female audiences, and guys can enjoy it too. Gene Kelly was the musicals that dudes could watch. And just, I know that we have this era of toxic masculinity and whatever. All right. I don't want to go down that road. There is something to be said for having a role model, regardless of whether it's fictional or not, regardless of whether the individual, like the real individual, was a good person or not. It's something to be said for a young man to be able to watch a film like I did when I was younger and see a guy that had good morals, cared about people, and he could dance really well.
Dance his ass off.
Yeah. And it was, you know, inspiring in a way and make you feel good about yourself, mm-hmm. and give you as a young male something to aspire to. So when I talk about the difference between Sound of Music, My Fair Lady, Oklahoma, and Gene Kelly movies, it's being able to identify mm-hmm. as a male with those characters. Women can enjoy them as well, but I do really think that Gene Kelly musicals are an untapped pleasure for guys who like song and dance, like looking at that stuff, because they're just brilliant. The ones that he does with Frank Sinatra, like Take Me Out to the Ball Game, Anchors Away, are great. Again, I said it last time we talked about this. This is probably his, without a doubt, his best. But the others are really good as well. So
you don't have to be a young man either. I turned 47 in 2 days.
Yeah.
And I am like, how can I be more like this person? I mean, I can't. I don't have the physical aptitude to dance like that. But I mean, it's just, you know, it was just so neat.
Mike Florida says it's a spectacular movie. Really enjoyed it as a child, and we would always watch it when we stayed over at my grandma's house, and enjoyed it even more as an adult. This is one of those films, like if you did go to your grandma's house and she put on, you'd initially be going, and then by, you know, like, well, 5 minutes in, you'd be
for my grandmother, for my granddad, it was Westerns. It was mm-hmm. all Westerns all the time, and not just movies. You know, it was Rawhide and Bonanza.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was on TV. With my grandmother, it was The Sound of Music, and it was My Fair Lady. Yeah. And in fact, when I got a little better at guitar, I learned my grandmother's favorite song from My Fair Lady, which is On the Street Where You Live. It's one of my favorite jazz standards.
Yes.
And she asked, early on when my brother and I started playing guitar, and there was no way we were going to be able to play that song, and after I had been playing for probably 5-6 years, I took the time to learn that song and then played it for her. And of course she thought it was great. And that is still a staple of, if I've got to play 8 or 10 songs, mm-hmm. For open mic or just for whatever, like I play that one every time. So I think we all have those grandma and granddad movies, you know, that we associate with that time. And again, that's a comfort, right? You know, I don't think I would have enjoyed watching Schindler's List with my grandparents.
It's almost like watching porn with your grandparents. It'd be like, it's the same feeling. It's like, oh, I can't look away, but I'm going to keep watching.
And you keep looking at them to see how they're, you know, dealing with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I must say, Greg, I think Schindler's List, you know, I don't know. It beat the number one, and I advocated for that. I kind of think back and go, well, is it a better movie? Like, as a movie, is a movie, and all the things that make a movie the movie, and it's not just what you see on the screen. You know, I don't know. I don't know. But it doesn't matter because it did win. But I would say for this matchup, which is Singing in the Rain and Schindler's List, I would go Singing in the Rain for this semifinal matchup. For me, I think if I am allowed to shift viewpoints, that is the movie I would watch 10 times out of 10. I mean, I honestly hope I never watch Schindler's List ever again in my entire life, but certainly given the choice, Singing in the Rain, and I do just think it's a better movie. What it means to be a movie, the DNA of being a movie, Singing in the Rain has it in ways that Schindler's List just doesn't.
Yes, I agree. So if I take my personal bias out of it, or I try to as best as I can, and like you said, I normally talk about how, like a great meal, which one would I, if I ordered it at a restaurant, would I order it again? I've used that analogy several times. Without a doubt, it would be Singing in the Rain. But if I step back and I look at the direction, the acting performances, the emotional gravitas and everything like that, and you go, okay, is Schindler's List better than Singing in the Rain? And I would say it's really close on that level. However, Cripply has just put in a comment. I always laugh so hard at the New York accent of Lena Lamont. So you think about that. You think about the intricacies and the exceptional dance numbers. You think about the use of color that just pops off the screen. The invoking of a positive attitude. The whole montage where they do the introduction of the talkies. And they just do this little comic montage. It's brilliantly filmed because it's flash and it's like green screen stuff that you've never seen before, and it's very unique in that aspect. So, and like we talked about, Gene Kelly directed it, as well as there was another director as well. They co-directed. Gene Kelly did most of the dance sequences and a lot of the big flashy numbers. It's very well done, and so it's one of those things that if you watch Schindler's List, you don't look at your watch. It's gripping and it holds you in place. And same thing with Singing in the Rain. You don't look at your watch. You just enjoy it and have a good time. And at the end of the day, I think Singing in the Rain, I agree with you, is I wouldn't even say a slight winner. I would say it's a better film overall as just a time capsule film. Like, we're going to put this in a time capsule to show future generations what movie making can be. And that's crazy to say for a film that was made 70 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy to say for a film that doesn't have much emotional weight to it, which I guess only lends even more credence to the fact that it's a better made movie, because even without the benefit, the like bonus benefit of a subject matter that will immediately gut punch you, it's able to make you feel everything you know, a person could want to feel going to the movies. I mean, ask anybody just standing outside of a movie theater. Hey, what are you going to see today? Man on the street. You know, what are you going to see today? Oh, I'm going to see whatever. Well, how are you hoping to feel when you come out of there? Well, excited and happy. And, you know, I'm hoping we'll just go watch fucking Singing in the Rain, because that's going to like cover all your bases right there. No one wants to go in there to be disappointed. They don't want to go in there to feel, you know,
exactly.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I think
we can safely say that the winner of the first Final Four battle between Singing in the Rain and Schindler's List is Singing in the Rain.
Look at us having the courage, Greg, to vote against the Holocaust. We finally, you know, we voted for the Holocaust the first time.
We did.
But I think that you and I have recognized that we probably shouldn't have done that. That voting against the Holocaust was the right way to go.
I think everyone should vote against. We didn't vote for the Holocaust. It's just,
well, you didn't. I guess you don't have to take any responsibility for that. All right. So Singing in the Rain
into the finals for sure. And that brings us to our next matchup, which is
okay. So listen, this Cripplius comment about the final solution. So when the Dallas Mavericks won the 2011 NBA championship,
all right,
with the great Dirk Nowitzki playing power forward, there was a person selling t-shirts here in town that had the iconic kind of fadeaway Dirk silhouette. And it said the finals solution. Oh. And Dirk is German.
Yes, he is.
And so it really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when I would wear that shirt. No, I'm not much sure. But yeah, people did not appreciate that attempt at humor. And I don't know that I appreciate it or not. It was just a story I wanted to tell about Dirk.
So I will say this, and for anybody who's watching this, we've made a few Holocaust jokes, and none of them have been really horrible. They've just been borderline.
You had a family member who was affected by the Holocaust, then.
But all I want to say about that is when I was growing up, we all agree it was a terrible thing. But Mel Brooks made one of the best movies about occupied Germany of all time, if you've never seen it, with his wife Anne Bancroft, To Be or Not to Be. And he made fun of, and then there's also The Producers, which has a
Hitler springtime. Yeah.
It is. So we, you know, those are the things that you get through these things with humor. And we definitely know the gravitas of the Holocaust as it was. And believe me, I you know, the things that I've read and the things that you've really seen are more graphic than even Schindler's List.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So it is.
Well, I think to be funny, you have to have heart. You have to have, you know, it's why, I don't know. Maybe it's why I find some comics to just land flat, because it doesn't seem like there's care and compassion in there. But when you obviously have that, I think it makes your jokes land better. I think it opens up subject matter that maybe others, you know, can't approach. But, and I'm not saying that you and I are two, you know, comedy geniuses who, you know,
well, at least you're fine.
Yeah, I'm not. But that can find, you know, ways to joke about just about anything. But I do think being willing to step out of line every now and then isn't necessarily indicative of you as a person. It's just trying to have a little
some of the greatest comedians of all time, George Carlin, you know, could say things that would be borderline offensive to a lot of people, especially today, would be extremely off-putting to a lot of people. It's the kind of thing that Bill Burr does right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not comparing us to either of those guys.
But just, I mean, I can see it.
That's nice. All right. So let's move on into the other battle. Like we kind of, I think that we both knew Singin' in the Rain was going to take that one, but we talked it out and we decided that was the right call. So now this next one is a little bit closer in my mind. I think closer, not much. Closer than Singin' in the Rain and Schindler's List. And we've got Casablanca versus The Godfather. Now, you know, Casablanca, when we watched it, narrowly beat Gone with the Wind, and it did so because of its overarching theme. Again, like Schindler's List, World War II, oppressed people, a hero that's trying to get them out of occupied area, getting ready to be occupied, you know, parts of Germany, but in Morocco. It's a fascinating film. It's extremely well done, especially for the time. And so we like that over Gone with the Wind. Now, Godfather was a slam dunk over Lawrence of Arabia. We both agreed that Lawrence of Arabia, fine, is a World War II movie, overlong, definitely should have been cut down to at least 2 hours. So Godfather just hit my mic stand there.
I was like, what is thundering or something?
That's a great little echo. But yeah, you know, it was overlong compared to what it was versus Godfather, who, I mean, I've watched Godfather a million times. I've talked about the connection to How I Met My Wife. It is a masterpiece. There's so many things to love about it. So when you compare Casablanca to Godfather, you have to look at it in the time it was made. You have to look at the cultural impact that both movies had during the time they made. And that's when they kind of get a little bit level, because Casablanca, when it was released, was at the, we've talked about this when we did Casablanca, was during World War II. It was,
yes, as that's what I found fascinating about that film, was that as it's happening, you create a film about refugees, and you know there's some humor to it, and you're invoking, you're using displaced actors, refugees, as extras in the movie. You're kind of taking the piss out of the German army, who at the time, I mean, the benefit of hindsight, you know, and maybe there were people who knew that they wouldn't have been able to sustain what they were able to accomplish in 39, 40, 40, that they were never going to be able to do that forever, and it eventually would crumble on them. But at the time, things were still going pretty great for the Nazis. And so to take the piss out of them that way, and I mean, it was, I was very surprised. I would have swore that movie came out in, you know, maybe the early 50s.
Right.
The war is over. All the boys are back home and they've all moved to the suburbs and they're all cranking out babies and it's the, you know, post-war economy and it's everything's great. No, it was like 43 when this fucker came out.
And so the thing for me is if I were to say to you and be like, okay, we've got Casablanca versus The Godfather, which is the better film. And if I was going to take the side of Casablanca, I would hit you with all kinds of stuff like that. The iconic imagery, the quotability, mm-hmm. it made Humphrey Bogart a sex symbol, which in itself is irony. I mean, it's literally, dude, this dude was always considered to be a gangster in a lot of his films. He was always like either a bad guy. And even when he wasn't, he was just this tough mobster-esque type guy.
Yeah.
He does this film. And all of a sudden, he's like the biggest sex symbol of all time.
Yeah.
And Ingrid Bergman had a lot to do with that. Again, beautiful co-lead that delivers her performance so perfectly.
Oh, the elegance.
Oh, it's amazing. And so many, like I said, quotable lines, you know, great characters, including Renault, who's, you know, partially a rapist.
Okay, right. I mean, only if you consider using a position of power to coerce women into having sex with you so that they can escape war-torn countries. If that's your definition of sexual abuse or assault, which it's to like me it is.
Congress. It's like half of Congress.
I mean, listen, it's like who among us?
Yeah, hasn't used their power. No, it is. But you know what? It's funny, though. Because he does do that, and when Rick thwarts him, he basically calls him a cock blocker. You're messing my game up, dude. What are you doing?
I have a perfect scam set up, you know, and you're screwed. Yeah, they didn't treat it with any type of gravity at all. It was just like maybe it was meant to be, just something that happened. And you know, thank you, Mike, for having the courage to come out against using positions of power.
I'll step out on a limb and say that's wrong. And they treat it in a very lighthearted way. Again, it is anybody but Claude Rains could do that. I mean, he comes off almost endearing, which is hilarious for a rapist. or whatever you want to call it. It wasn't necessarily rape, but whatever you want to call it. But the fact that he was selling favors to get people out of Casablanca and he was going to sleep with the man's wife just to get them out. And of course, Rick uses the roulette wheel to end up, you know, buying their way out. Crazy stuff. I mean, but outside of that, I think you see the character Renault start to get morals. I think that kind of like builds on that toward the end where
I don't even know that they even care about that. If I'm being honest, it doesn't seem like, it seems like we care about it more because having the benefit of 80 years of our 60 years of hindsight
makes you wonder about 1943.
Right. So we are able to pick apart the little picadillos that probably at the time the audience didn't even think about.
Nope, we see it.
Yeah. And we only, even further than that, the benefit of hindsight is simply just you saying he's one of your favorite characters. And I know why. It's just easy enough to give you a hard time because he has this other part of him. But he is a good character for this film.
He's hilarious. He's comic relief. He just has this one flaw.
I give too much of my money to charity and I often find myself, you know, financially, you know, in trouble because of it. You know, it's a flaw of mine. This guy is a raper and
other than that, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. A lot of people thought Epstein, you know, was a good guy. So
No one ever talks about all the great things he did.
Oh, all the underage youth that he gave employment to.
That's right. The guy didn't want to see anybody unemployed. Yeah, I mean, listen, the only thing that Casablanca has going against it as we sit here today is that, unfortunately for Casablanca, it's not The Godfather.
No, I agree.
It is literally the only thing wrong with Casablanca is that it is not The Godfather. It would beat Schindler's List.
Yeah.
It would probably be really close on Singing in the Rain. I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's up against The Godfather.
Yeah.
And you and I both were very effusive on The Godfather for, I mean, listen to that episode if you want to know why The Godfather holds the place that it does for Greg, specifically for me as Dr. Dumbass, who doesn't know anything about movies, who doesn't know anything about this stuff. It's the reason I was on the Jarrett podcast. It's the reason I'm on this podcast, is because you got to have someone who's a dumb fuck, and here I am. But yet Greg and I both watched that movie and spent 2.5 hours talking about how great that movie was, and 30 minutes talking about what a piece of shit Lawrence of Arabia was. And that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, Greg, feel free to touch on the high points. I feel like we will devolve into all of the things we said already. This movie's perfect. There's nothing wrong with this movie. Find one thing about it that isn't expertly crafted. Find a performance there that's wasted. Find a piece of the script that doesn't land exactly how it was intended. Find a shot that isn't framed in a way that either brings you up to speed with what was happening or pushes you along to what's about to happen. I dare anybody to just watch it and find something that doesn't work. I don't know. I didn't find anything.
You know, I've talked to people just because we're doing this, and people have been intrigued, people that I work with, people I golf with, and I tell them, hey, what, this is what we're doing, watch the podcast, and now we're down to the final four. And there are people that don't like The Godfather for different reasons. And most
of them, let's hear them.
Well, the big thing is some people don't like films about the mafia.
Okay.
And so it's glorifying a criminal code or criminal organization. Now, and I can understand that. It's like, if you don't like films about any gangsters at all, like even going back to the Prohibition days and looking at, you know, Lucky Luciano or Bugsy Malone or any of those, I get it. If you don't like glorifying violence, Bonnie and Clyde, people don't like that because they're villains, you know, whatever. So I can understand that. But as a piece of cinematic art, or just watching a film, I talked about it last time. Some people think it's boring. And it's like, I don't even understand how you even can watch a film if you think The Godfather is boring, because the dialogue is written better than any Tarantino film, if you like dialogue, and he's considered one of the masters of it. And I do think, like, the dialogue in Reservoir Dogs and other films are amazing, but the dialogue in Godfather, Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola locked themselves in a mansion in the Hollywood Hills to write that script to adapt the Puzo novel. And they came up with just an unbelievable, you know, through an excruciating means, an unbelievable script. And it's just one of these things that, you know, we talked about Singing in the Rain makes me feel good emotionally because it's upbeat and positive. Even though Godfather can be gut-wrenching, even though Godfather can be so many different things on so many different levels, it makes me feel good. And I can't that. And that makes me feel weird, because it's like, it's violent. It's about organized crime. Why do I feel good when I watch it? why does it invoke good vibes? It could be the performances, could be Marlon Brando, could be Al Pacino. I don't know.
Could be you met your wife watching it. You know, could be any number of things. Could be that you're just a psychopath. It could be any number of things.
Yeah,
that's but true. How that, and I'm not saying that's my experience with it. I don't think it made me feel like that.
Oh, I just, I love watching it.
Felt, I think, the way that a lot of people feel about it, and just, you know, as it's happening that you're watching a masterpiece. If this movie were boring, I'd know it, because I don't know any, you know, I kind of thought Citizen Kane was pretty fucking boring.
I agree to disagree, but yeah.
So if there were room for it to be boring, I'd have sniffed it out already, but it wasn't. Again, I think it just comes down to, for all of the good things about Casablanca, and there are plenty. I mean, yeah, way more good than any bad at all. I don't know that I could say there's anything bad about it. It's just that The Godfather is a perfect film.
Yeah.
It's just that as you watch this movie, you know it's perfect. It's just, as a whole, it's perfect. And it's, as you just said, as you pull pieces out of it, the dialogue, yeah, that was perfect. The cinematography, also perfect. The casting, also perfect. The pace of the story, also perfect. I mean, as a whole, I mean, some things are, you know, more than the sum of its parts. Right. I don't know that The Godfather is. It's exactly the sum of its parts. All of the parts are perfect, and it made a perfect movie. Like, it only stands to reason that that's how that worked. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately for Casablanca, yeah, I'm going with The Godfather on this one. I kind of figured you probably would too, but let's hear it straight from the...
Well, we got Kriplius here who just wanted to say he read the book. I've never read the book. I probably should. I've watched the movie 100 times.
Feels Kay like you should.
Worse. Kay comes off worse in the book. Spoiler, she ends up going to church to pray for Michael's soul, having given up the rest of her life. I tell you what, Kay is insufferable in the movie as well, but only from the standpoint of she's an outsider. And when he slams the hand down, don't ask me about my business, Kay. It's that whole, you know, the whole 40s mentality, you know, your place, you're out of your element, you're out of your place. But again, it's a time capsule into that world. And what is so amazing about that final scene is when he walks out of the room believing him. And she, yeah, it is one of the best final scenes of a movie. Now, granted, Casablanca has, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. But Godfather has Kay turning around to see them kissing Michael's ring, and you know she's fucked. You just look at it, and she even gives the way she just facial expression of being, oh shit.
If only he could have ended up with the vermicelli or whatever her name was. Apollonia. Vermicelli. I knew it was something like that.
Oh, I wonder if there's any Italian kids named Vermicelli, because that'd be really funny. But yeah, Apollonia, who was, I mean, better for him. Unfortunately, she gets blown to bits when she says, "Monetura when the
Friday." Oh, Friday. I know English.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think we've agreed. And I, in my head, when I looked at this final four, I said the same thing. I'm like, we're going to vote Singing in the Rain and Godfather into the finals. But yeah, our final four battle winner is The Godfather, without a doubt. Godfather and Singing in the Rain, which after doing the whole thing together with you, I'm like, these are the two films that we both kind of, I felt that were, this is where it was going to, was Singing in the Rain and The Godfather in the finals.
That's what I thought too.
I mean, we've been doing this now for a few weeks. We've counted down the top eight, and you could just tell from the vibe. We've watched these movies. We've texted each other when we've watched them, and we talked about it offline. And we kind of went, damn, this is kind of, we're of the same mind, which is kind of funny because going into this podcast with you and watching the Jarrett Goes to the Movies, there were times I disagree with you and I'm going to disagree with you in the future. But in this grouping, we've been fairly close, except for maybe Schindler's List and Citizen Kane.
Yeah. And for different reasons, you know, that one, I think that matchup specifically just drew out the differences in our background more than these others did. And
yeah, I think also because I watched Citizen Kane at a young age and it was when I was like very obsessed with film. And so it was like, that was kind of an iconic movie for me. And you're just watching it just now. It has a different impact when you're not seeking it out. I was seeking it out as somebody who was intrigued. And then there's another movie, Marx Brothers. Now, everybody says Duck Soup is the best film, but Animal Crackers, I sought out, and it is, from beginning to end, probably one of the best written comedies I've ever watched. Now, they did it on the stage, and then they transferred it to film. And I went, I remember going to my library in the 90s, and checking out Citizen Kane and Marx Brothers Animal Crackers for free on VHS from the library.
As the librarian looked at you like, what a fucking dweeb. This guy.
Without a doubt.
Were you wearing a beret or anything?
Like I was a guardian angel.
You're just like, I'm going to watch some cinema here. I know it's not part of our deal, but I would just say if we had to do a runner-up matchup here, which would be Schindler's List and Casablanca, I'd probably go Casablanca on that.
Yes.
Would give us our third place.
Let's give the bronze to Casablanca. I would. Hey, Mike saw me pouring another drink. So
no, cheers.
Father's Day special. So, yeah, that's good stuff. Thank you, Mike. I agree with you. Bronze goes to Casablanca. I love Schindler's List. They're both World War II films. I'm more uplifted by Casablanca, the defiance of the German officers there at the bar, the singing scene where they sing the French national anthem. Amazing. So yeah, Casablanca. But now we've got to deal with when I looked at this, I went, we're going to get to Singing in the Rain and Godfather, most likely. And we're going to have to decide, like Sophie's Choice, which of these two amazing films that we both love. We've loved through this experience. Which of these two are the best overall? And can we agree? So, I don't know.
I don't know that we can agree. I mean, first of all, this is our show. And no one can make me do anything that I don't want to do. So if I just abstain from voting, then
I get to vote.
Then you just tell me which one is the better one. Because for all the reasons that we talked about in each of their respective initial matchups, and all of the reasons that we just talked about just now, this is measuring the proverbial six of one and half dozen of the other. I don't know. I guess it's just for me. Like, I know that The Godfather is the better of these two films, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the one I would watch more than the other. But then I would feel bad that I didn't get to watch The Godfather when I wanted to. But if you can only take... You know,
the desert island dilemma. If you could only take one of these two movies to a desert island with you to watch over and over again while you're waiting to be rescued,
and whichever one you choose, you know you would miss the other one, yeah. And so there's not a right answer, there's not a wrong answer, yeah. And maybe we're putting too much pressure on ourselves just for the sake of the show or whatever it is, but. I don't know how you tell. It kind of leaves me a little speechless because what is there to say about either one of them that we haven't already said that right. pushes one clearly ahead of the other? I can't think of anything. It makes me wish we had five co-stars that could help us decide one way or the other. You know, what do you where are you coming from on this initially? Well, just
if we drew and go to the audience, we had a few comments today, and most were favorable of The Godfather. But I do want to do a shout out to, I want to say this hopefully correctly, Zvi Hirsch. Zvi Hirsch on Facebook, who is really, he did say he really is enjoying the podcast and he loves both of us. And I told him, thank you very much. And he said, Singing in the Rain, because he's not big into gangster films, but everybody else was kind of on The Godfather side. I get both reasons. I love both of these films. And it was like, yeah, it's like one of those things where you've got two children, which do you, you know, toss aside like Sophie's Choice and say that I love this one. If I'm going to take all of the elements together, and it's a really hard thing, but it's one of those things where I'm going to take direction. I'm going to take acting performances. I'm going to take the emotional gravitas. I'm going to take the construction of the plot, the way it unfolds. It just, Godfather has all of that. It is one of those things that it starts so simply, and we talked about it when we covered it during the podcast. The wedding scene introduces all of the characters, and you don't get that whole plot exposition that just regurgitated. It's done in such a natural way. Once the wedding scene's over, you don't need to know anything about anybody because Michael's done told you.
I already know their motivations. I already know the dynamics between them. I already know, yeah, like you said, it sets up everything and it sets it up perfectly.
Yep. Cripplea says that people still quote The Godfather, not many quoting Singing in the Rain. I would almost disagree. Make them laugh. People still, you know, I'm singing in the rain. In fact, I saw people still do that when it's raining. So, yes, I would say that going to the mattresses, sleeping with the fishes, those quotes are... The offer you can't refuse are ingrained. But even then, there's a whole generation that hasn't even watched The Godfather, that has no clue of what it is. That's a travesty. I mean, it's bad enough that people don't watch Singing in the Rain these days. But the fact that there's a generation that doesn't even give a shit about The Godfather. And hopefully, like this podcast, maybe say, go freaking rent it. You'll enjoy yourself. It's one of those things. Now, I will say this. I've been watching, I just finished it, as a matter of fact, and I highly recommend it. History Channel. There's a documentary, three-parter, called The Five Families, American Godfathers. And it goes into from the beginning of the Cosa Nostra in America to all the way in through Gotti, through everything, through the mid-2000s and where it is today. And it's fascinating to me because all the things that Mario Puzo put into the script are in that documentary. This was real shit that he was getting inside information on. The sleeping with the fishes in the documentary, going to the mattresses in the documentary. This isn't shit that he made up. This is stuff that was real. And they actually, in the documentary, talks about Columbo, Joe Columbo, who was a Don, who wanted to have The Godfather shut down until Al Ruddy negotiated with him to bring actual mafia people into the picture. And then he settled the deal with the unions and then he loved it. The condition was in The Godfather, the word mafia is never mentioned, or Cosa Nostra, never mentioned. And
yeah, I guess I hadn't thought of that.
In the end, when you look at The Godfather and you look at all the stories that I saw in this documentary about the real five families, good Lord, it is so genuine. It's spot on. It's so spot on. It's amazing.
So frame it. So you said something pretty poignant. So I'm going to ask the question in that frame of reference, because you pulled the classic old man, Greg, kids these days thing. So, if you were teaching a film class to high schoolers, but you could only choose one of these films to show them, which film are you showing them?
That's a great question.
Discussing with them, talking about all the things we talk about, how movies were made, how, all the thing.
If you were going to make a film like Chicago, then it would be Singing in the Rain, but that kind of movie doesn't come along very often. The type of movies that are really enjoyable these days are, and they're so few that could even hold a candle to The Godfather, but can aspire to be as good as The Godfather. It would be The Godfather for sure. It would be like, look at this. Look at every scene. Look at how it transitions from one theme to another without being forced. So when I was in film school, again, I don't want to pull my master's degree card, but when I was in film school, one of the things that they had was a formula on writing a script, a three-act script. Mm-hmm. And there was always the hook. And I'm going to tell everybody, this is a clue. When you watch a new movie, watch a new movie and listen to this. The hook is the first 10 minutes when you get the audience. In a horror movie, it's that whole opening scene where the monster gets the people that they don't expect it. Then you have the character development. You introduce your characters. You put them in an old face in a new place. Fish out of water, whatever they got to do. You get them, they're awkward persons. Then in the second act, you start to build the conflict. And then the third act is resolution. Godfather doesn't do any of that shit. There's no hook. The hook comes with just the speech of, I believe in America.
Yeah.
And you're sucked in. And then there's a whole 20-minute wedding sequence.
Wouldn't call it a hook, right?
Yeah, it defies convention. By the time you get with that wedding sequence, you don't know where it's going, but you know you want to be a part of it. And that's what makes The Godfather so intriguing as a film.
Well, and it's a testament to that saying, you've got to know the rules before you can break the rules. They say it about fashion. They say it about cooking. They say it about, lots of different art. And it's just an example that it's so good, despite not following convention, says probably even more about the film. I know. I'm real bummed out. It does not feel right. Knowing how I felt when I sat down on the couch and pulled up Singing in the Rain, and then, 10 minutes later, Kelsey comes in from making a phone call, and I'm just like, this is so great. Like, unexpectedly great. And maybe that plays a part in why I think it's so good, because it was so out of nowhere for me. I don't think I expected to enjoy the humor of, the presentation of, the song and dance of a 70-year-old film.
Yeah.
But I did. On the other hand, I had seen Godfather before, and I expected to enjoy it this time, and I did. I learned a little more about it, watching it for the second time and recognizing the Michael story and all this. It's called The Godfather, and we start with a Godfather, but it's the story of our new Godfather. Mm-hmm. Right. And that part's probably pretty obvious. And I learned a lot more about it talking with you about it. Now, we've discussed this film a couple of times now, but yeah, it's just, it's The Godfather. Where was this? If you pull up the bracket again, was this the number 2 movie on the AFI list?
Yes.
Okay. So we have moved this movie up one place from number 2 to number 1. Yeah. I mean, Godfather's my vote.
So if you look at
51-49, but that is the way it has to be.
Yeah, so if you look at where we started, Godfather was number 2 and Singing in the Rain was number 5. So I think to move, and I'm going to say right now, I agree with you. I love Singing in the Rain. It is so meaningful to me, and I think it is an amazing musical, and I think everybody can enjoy it. But I do think that Godfather has just a slight edge. So that moving into number one and Singing in the Rain moving to number two, I'm not upset with that.
No, kind of cool. These were cool. The two best movies we watched, and we moved Casablanca from three to three. I mean, was that what it was?
Yeah, so it's fine.
Those were the three standout movies of the ones that we watched. This experience has been great for me. I got to watch seven movies that I hadn't seen before that are considered classics, whether we agreed with that or not. I think, obviously, we had some trouble with Lawrence of Arabia.
A little with Raging Bull as well. I mean, it is what it is.
And Raging Bull. And honestly, the more I think about it, I'm having a tougher time justifying Schindler's List as a piece of art and cinema as much as I am like, and I don't mean this derogatory, especially against someone who's proven to be one of the preeminent filmmakers of our time.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, who with a minimal amount of training couldn't make a Holocaust movie that was impactful, that really hit you in the, you know, groin? It's already a powerful subject. It wouldn't take much craft and care to turn it into a, you know, a movie that's like that. So I'm not trying to play revisionist historian. I'm just trying to think about these eight movies as a whole. I love the three that we ranked, the top three.
Yeah.
And then I think that there's a very significant drop off between those three.
I would throw Gone with the Wind as a solid four, regardless of its problematic. It is problematic past. It is a epic film that deserves that recognition. But outside of that, Godfather, Singing in the Rain, I'm perfectly happy with the way that has come out. I think that that's the right call. And very slightly, I mean, Godfather is just one of those things that you can't escape, you know, as far as cultural movie appreciation. If you don't like it, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. If you don't like mafia movies, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can't deny that it is a great film. And I always go back to where I was a young man in my like early 20s, and my future wife had never seen it. And I was so passionate about it where I was like, oh, I've got to bring this two VHS tape set to, you've got to see this film. And we bonded over it. And her favorite film at the time was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And we watched it over and over. And again, another good film. There's so many other films out there when we talk about Does Schindler's List Belong? Yeah, we could say, no, it doesn't. It's a great film. Does it belong in the top 10 or anyway? But it's all personal preference. My personal preference, like as far as like Steven Spielberg goes, that's not my favorite Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
I'm leaning toward like Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., you know, there's a lot of good Spielberg films out there. So this one to be in that top eight, it's like, yeah, this is kind of the critics thing. And we knew that going into the AFI thing, that this was going to be the critics thing. And we kind of, we prepared our audience for that. So I thank you for everyone for bearing with us. The categories from here on out are going to be a little bit more Eric and Greg.
Asked Kelsey if she said she was going to pull up a podcast, and I was like, are you pulling up our podcast? And she's like, maybe when you do some movies I care about.
All right. So we started with AFI's top eight because it seemed the right thing to do, that we're doing a movie, we're launching a movie podcast. Let's do the AFI's top eight and kind of be movie nerds about it. But now we're going to get into fun, because the way we came up with this, or I would say I came up with this with Eric, I consulted with Eric on this list, was I took the top eight sports comedies of all time, and I judge them based on IMDb score, box office, Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes. Dude, I had a spreadsheet. I'm not joking. I had a spreadsheet that can get compiled all of these scores.
Our homebrew scoring system.
And I gave an average score onto all of these films.
Okay.
At the end, there were four films that were kind of really close within percentage points. So I put out to the Facebook page a poll and said, of these four films, which one would you choose? And it was Bull Durham, Goon, which is a hockey film, great film, and Dodgeball. And I'm trying to think of what the fourth one was, but I can't remember it right now. Anyway, Dodgeball won the eighth seed into our podcast of top sports comedies. And again, I want to preface, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, that these are going to be adult oriented. So this is not Sandlot, Bad News Bears, Little Giants. These are kind of on the adult spectrum of comedies. So either they're R rated or they're very close to R rated. I think Dodgeball's PG-13, but we all know it's borderline. So out of all of them, it was 58% of the vote.
Maybe some recency bias here, but we'll see as we get into it.
But it is a good sports comedy, so I'm not going to deny that. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to look at Mike Florida. Dodgeball is all the Mighty Ducks. Touche. That could be true.
Please don't hold us to our own logic and standards. Yeah. There's nothing we hate more than having to justify our decision making.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
Blood.
Anyway. So Dodgeball is the eighth seed in our sports comedies bracket, and the number seven seed is Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
So that is going to be a lot of fun. Kingpin, Randy Quaid, Woody Harrelson, and the great Bill Murray. One of the best sports comedies of all time. The Farrelly Brothers. Farrelly Brothers. An amazing film. Can't wait to break that one down.
Yes.
Number six seed is White Men Can't Jump.
Hey. Woody Harrelson again.
Woody, a second trip in here, and Wesley Snipes again. Probably one of the funniest basketball movies ever made. I saw this in the theaters, and I had a great time with it. So the number six seed for our sports comedies is White Men Can't Jump. The number fifth seed is Happy Gilmore.
All right, yeah, that should be on there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a sports comedies without Happy Gilmore. I'm going to admit that. Definitely a great film, one of the best golfing comedies of all time, except for our number four seed.
Oh, Caddy, it's got to be Caddy. Yeah.
It's Caddyshack. That is going to be a great one. I've watched Caddyshack 100 times. I think if you even played golf once in your life, you've watched this film.
Golf is a perfect sport to take the piss out of because it kind of has that reputation of being the stuffy, old gentleman's game. And so it's easy to send that up with hijinks and mayhem and kind of that kind of stuff. So yeah, these will be great to watch.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, to these matchups. So now that takes us to the number three seed in our sports comedies, and that is The Longest Yard, the original, not the Adam Sandler version, with Burt Reynolds. If you've never seen this, you're in.
I have not. Yeah.
You're in for a treat. This is probably one of the one of the best sports comedies of all time. It's one of the fucking funniest movies of all time. There's so many great moments in this film, and it's probably one of Burt Reynolds' best, maybe next to Smokey and the Bandit. So,
and see, he became a caricature of himself, or really Norm MacDonald.
Yeah,
made him a caricature of himself without him kind of being a part of it. But I think we probably forget that he was the leading man.
Oh yeah.
For
the 70s,
early 80s, the dude was in hit after hit, and for good reason.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I haven't seen this one. I'll be
you are gonna,
to watch this one.
You're gonna really enjoy The Longest Yard. It is one of my favorite sports comedies, if not one of my favorite comedies. And that brings us to the number two seed, which is Major League. Frickin' Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen. It's just, yeah, it's going to be Corbin Burnson, one of the best baseball comedies ever made. And it's our number two seed in our sports comedies. And that brings us to our number one seed, which I was surprised, but the critic rating kind of weighed into it. I actually love this film. It's a little dated, but man, is it fun to watch. And it is the number one seed. It is Slapshot.
Okay, I wondered if that was going to be on the list.
Yeah.
And then as we got closer to number one, I was thinking, well, maybe it didn't make the cut. So I think it should be on the list. I'm surprised to see it at number one, but
it is
here the we are. One seed. Okay.
Well, let's take a look at this bracket. This is the bracket. Slapshot will take on Dodgeball in the first round, and Major League will take on Kingpin. Longest Yard will take on White Men Can't Jump, and Caddyshack will take on Happy Gilmore. And that is our next podcast, which is next Tuesday. We are going to put Caddyshack against Happy Gilmore in our next podcast. It's Sunday. Or actually, I don't know why I keep putting
Sunday. What in the hell are you doing? We did that one time, like to accommodate one of our schedules.
We're getting to change the name of the date. It is Tuesday, everyone. Next Tuesday, 27 August, our first round matchup of the top adult sports comedies of all time will be Caddyshack versus Happy Gilmore. So that's what we got going on, man. I just want to say, first of all, thank you, everyone, for joining tonight and being in the chat and everything like that. Our regular guys that are always in there with us. I do want to thank you. That, and if you can make sure that if you're listening to this for the first time, whether it's through the podcast provider like Spotify or Amazon Music or Pandora or anything that you're looking on, make sure that you subscribe and then go to our YouTube page. It's right there on the screen at Box Office Battle Podcast. Make sure you give us a subscribe there, as well as the Twitch as well, so that we can keep this thing going on. We enjoy doing it for you. We're very happy to continue to do this for you, but we want to make sure that we have hold on. I got, my son is chiming in. Said the next August 27 is in 2028. That's a Sunday.
I was I'm pretty sure there's going to be one next year, but
he thinks he's funny. All right. Turn that down again. Thanks for everybody for joining tonight on the Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We are going to be back next Tuesday, August 27th, at the same time, 9 o'clock Eastern, and we're going to discuss Happy Gilmore versus Caddyshack, which, I mean, honestly, on the surface, kind of know who I'm leaning to, but damn, I'm going to watch them both and really make an informed decision.
That sounds good. It's all we can expect from you, Greg, is to do the bare minimum that the show requires, which is watch two movies. So
I can definitely drink some whiskey and enjoy that while we're doing this. I tell you what, it was a great night. I enjoyed the fact that we came to the result of Godfather being our number one movie. That's pretty impressive. That's how we came to it.
Only a mildly broken heart. Very few fist fights. We're still friends, I do believe, after multiple rounds of this. So, excellent job, Greg.
Thank you. We'll be back again.
For the rest of you guys, until next time, be excellent to each other. We'll see y'all then.